All right, Kurt, thank you so much for being here today. We've never had a professional baseball player on, so this is a big deal to us. And I'm sure there's a ton that you can teach us about the wisdom of the game and then how you can apply it to life, because we're full count, you know, three balls, two strikes,
yep.
The biggest pressure in your life when you're playing baseball, right? And then how you can apply that to life. So if you could just go over your career overall in professional baseball and kind of how you got there from University of Arizona.
Yeah. So actually, first of all, I wanted to say thank you for having me on the show. I love the title also, Full Count. In my opinion, sports, that's the most, you know, nerve-wracking, you know, thing. It's almost like a buzzer beater, like the 2-minute clock on a football field. So it's, that's kind of like our, you know, do or die situation.
Do or die. I like that. That's,
but you know, yeah, I went to the University of Arizona. We won a national championship in 2012. So we put a feather in that cap. And then me and my teammates, we got drafted our junior year. I got drafted by the St. Louis Cardinals. Nice. And, my first experience there was I got sent to Batavia. We were just talking about that earlier. Yep. And talking about housing and stuff, I was with a host family for my first time there with a roommate. Actually, we were both living in the attic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And my teammate didn't know a lick of English. Right. He was from I think he was from Venezuela. And he was just looking at me like, oh, pitcher? I'm like, yeah. And then I
Do you speak a little bit of Spanish?
I'm doing Duolingo right now. So like I'm trying to learn a little bit playing in Mexico now. Right. But yeah, we had three kids in the house, and it was just every day was just random stuff. Like I would either walk into the door after a long game getting hit by Nerf guns, or a kid would be like, hey, come on, let's play. We're going to play. I'm like, dude, this is not what I expected like professional baseball to be like.
Three balls, two strikes, pressure is on. This is where we discuss real estate, property improvement, and business. Together, we'll strategize on how to win. Welcome to the Full Count.
Like, dude, this is not what I expected like professional baseball to be like.
And that's what makes it so cutthroat, doesn't it? Because like, not only do you have the pressure on the field, but then you come home to the host family.
Yes.
You would think you could just relax.
Yes.
But you're now going through this.
Yes. It definitely weeds out the week, I guess. Like, cause not many people understand like, dude, I'm here to do a job, but like I now have to actually make conversation with the people that are letting me live with them and stuff, which I had no problem with whatsoever.
Yeah,
I mean,
you were grateful.
Yeah. That. I was so grateful. Right. Cause like, they would come to the games, watch us, support us. And then, you know, we'd have and we'd have a family dinner after and stuff. You know, sometimes, you know, you have a rough game. You don't really feel like talking, but you know, you still have to, you know, muster up a little bit of strength left to like do it. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm super thankful for them though. Like it was a really fun experience. I just like, you know, experiencing new things, especially, you know, when it comes to like, you know, living in a different city and just, I met new teammates and it was just, I just thought it was a great time.
Do you stay in touch with all the players overall? Like, I know you've been on multiple teams, but.
So one of my teammates from college, Alex Mejia, he got drafted with me in the same year. So, and he actually was playing in Mexico these last like 4 years. Right. So we stay in touch for sure. Right. Other people, you know, from organizations, like I still follow them on Instagram. I see them doing big things. Like, you know, a lot of big leaguers are still playing. And also like guys from indie ball that I played with. I've had a few of my college teammates. When I got married in 2022, I had three of my teammates, you know, be groomsmen. So you definitely meet a lot of people. And then over the years, you know, you kind of fall out touch out of them a little bit, but you kind of every year you just recycle a little bit and you just find new friends and stuff, which keeps it interesting.
Sure.
So yeah,
no, that's awesome. And how about like the whole University of Arizona, that do you feel that helped prepare you for professional baseball, or is there like a big gap in terms of skill set?
So the one thing I took from it was like, it definitely made you mentally tougher. Like, cause I was in a very difficult conference where expectations were high. You're expected to win. In terms of like preparing for like the next level, I had like the repertoire to be successful, but I wish if I could say one thing to like young players,
yeah,
make sure you get a third pitch. Like I was a two pitch guy through and through.
And you're a pitcher. Let's mention that
too. Yeah. So I was a fastball, sinker, slider guy. So like I was just doing this the whole time. Okay. And I didn't have like a changeup, especially as a starter. You don't have that like, you know, off speed to like back off guys. Cause now people are like, okay, he's either throwing everything away or going inside a little bit. So you need that third pitch to kind of offset your other stuff. And especially when I got drafted, the Cardinals actually saw me more as a bullpen guy because of my two pitch arsenal.
Right.
So, okay. I was like, okay, my velocity goes up a little bit and then, but my stuff plays better. And I was just getting pulled back and forth, like into being a reliever or a starter. So like, I was like a spot starter in a sense.
How did you feel with that though? When they would constantly,
it was definitely challenging because it made me feel like I had to do two things. Like I was looking left and right at the same time. Like I was constantly thinking, okay, I have to, when I become a starter, I have to have three pitches. And then when I'm a bullpen guy, I don't have to worry about that. But I was starting more than I was relieving at the time. So like, you know, I was almost like, can I relieve today, please? Like, I don't have to worry about throwing a changeup. But as I got older and realized like, okay, I really need to like take time out of the off season to like really work on stuff. So then I developed a cutter and then a curveball and I started getting better. And then, but by the time, like I figured it out, like I actually didn't tell you about this back in 2017. The reason why I got released was because I had the yips. And in baseball terms, that is a bad thing to happen. That's like, you know, when I say yips, it means like I couldn't throw a pitch. I went like 50 feet to the left. Like,
really?
Yeah. And it happened so quickly. Like I don't think people realize like it happens at the weirdest, most random times. I was playing catch with one of my teammates that got called up. We got called up to a big league game and during spring training, and Mike Matheny, our coach at the time, and Adam Wainwright were standing right behind us, and I almost hit them. And I'm like, Oh shoot. I'm like, all right, give me the ball back. I throw another one. I almost hit them again. I'm like, all right, we're done. No more. I'm not playing.
You knew right there. And then.
I didn't. I was kind of like trying to ignore it. I was trying to put it in the back of my head. So
that's
then
a mind effort.
So I go. We do PFPs, which is pitcher fielding practice, and I throw. I'm doing one where I throw to third base, and I zooted another one. I was like, oh my god, what's happening right now? Thankfully, we had an off day. So the next day, I'm just throwing in a net, just trying to figure it out. And then the next day, I was supposed to pitch in the game, and I'm warming up, and it just happened like that. Like it, I tried everything. I was trying to like change my mechanics, trying to change my arm slot, trying everything to just throw it over the plate, and nothing was happening. And I had to go to my coach and be like, "Hey, I need a day." Like, and then like I get called up to AAA. I start off the season with AAA, and it just. It kind of just didn't happen. And then like my coach called me and was like, hey dude, we can't keep you. Like, you know, we don't know what's going on, but you know, we really just hope the best for you. Uh-huh. And then, so then my agent at the time, who actually is in Beverly Hills, they're called Beverly Hills Sports Council. I'm not with them anymore, but like they recommended me to play indie ball. So I went to indie ball. And that was the next chapter of my career.
After
2017, I went straight into indie ball that summer. Went to Sioux City, Iowa, where you're going to hear a lot of small town cities from me. That's my next housing situation where I had a host family again in a renovated barn, actually.
Hey, that could be kind of cool, though.
Depending
what you mean by renovated.
No, so it was a house. It was like a house, like American Psycho on a hill house. And then down the hill was a renovated barn where another family lived. So I was with two kids and four cats. And I had my own room. And they said that was the best room they had. Technically, they just gave me their room.
And do these people get paid by the organization?
Yes. Okay, so they get a monthly stipend every year. So the more players they take in, the more money they make. So they're like, hey, we'll take four of them if you want. So it was like, I think it was like $200 a head. So like they're making an extra like $800 off us. But it was really hard because like I also the walls were really thin, so I could hear everything. So like I would hear them like, oh, Kurt didn't. didn't look good today. Like, you know, I was like, I'm like, hey guys, I can hear you over there. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry, Kurt. And then like in the middle of the night,
talk about having strong mentality.
Oh my God. I'm going to say this about any ball, people who don't understand any ball, it will humble the crap out of you. Like you people, I was in a complete denial phase when I got to, I was in AAA and then I'm down at the bottom feeders. I was like, I shouldn't be here. It humbles you so quickly because there's a lot of other guys down there that are hungry as hell, just as much as you are, actually even more hungry because they never got a shot to play professional baseball. So like, you kind of like,
they're extremely into it.
So they're constantly like, especially like young pitchers that have great stuff. They just never got the opportunity and stuff. They're picking your brains and then they get a shot. You gotta be happy for them. Like at that same time. But me, you know, this was like, 6 years, 7 years ago, I was just like, I shouldn't be here. Like, I'm better than this. Like, this was a mistake. Didn't you feel like
you had a target on your back though, too, because you came from AAA? Do you feel like they were coming after you in a way as well?
Yeah. Obviously, when you're down there, you're with a bunch of younger guys, but also, I mean, they probably see you and they see you pitch and they're like, oh, I'm way better than this guy. Like, why did he get a shot than I didn't get a shot? So like that kind of fuels them even more. But then like you see guys getting picked up and then you're thinking like, when am I going to get picked up? Like, when is my time? Like, and you kind of like, it was like, you have to not look at it like month to month. You have to think of like as a whole. Cause I was talking to my coach at the time, like, hey, how long do I have to be here?
The guy that was in AAA?
No, the guy that was my coach in Indy Ball. Okay. Yeah. So he was like, hey, listen, if you can give me one solid month, we can get you out of here. I'm like, okay.
That sounds good.
But never happened. I could never, I strung like three good starts together and then the wheels fell off again. I just couldn't, like I said, I had the yip. So I was still trying to work through some stuff. And then instead of I should have just taken the whole year off from, So
are you lefty or righty?
I'm a righty, unfortunately. So my kid, like my son Cruz, is definitely going to be a lefty. I'm going to be tying his right arm behind his back. And he's like, hey, you're going to throw lefty the entire time. But anyway, like I kind of wanted to like wipe that from my memory. So I went back to school to Arizona. I wanted to finish up my degree. And then, I just wanted to go somewhere where I felt safe and welcomed and, you know, like everybody knows me there, like, you know, the athletic department, like, oh, welcome back, Kurt, like you're here. I'm like, so like I was excited to be back. And then I was an intern strength coach for my athletic department, which I thought was awesome.
Right. At University of Arizona.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So I got to live in a studio actually. Okay. So like I was by myself. I never been in a studio place before, which I had one of those sliding dividers.
Yeah.
Like, so like, okay, here's my living room.
So the layout's not just completely
It was like, I think it was like 500 square feet.
Oh my gosh.
It was horrible. But it was fine for me because I had everything I wanted.
I mean, you lived with the host family before that.
Yeah. To me, it was like a kingdom.
Yeah,
like I thought,
independence, on your own. Yeah.
I didn't hear any like bad mouthing. I didn't hear any gossiping around me. So it was nice. I felt like a regular student. I was able to go to football games, like just kind of like mesh, but I felt like the old guy on campus. Even though I was only like 26, I still felt like I was like 35. I was like, damn, everybody's like young to me. And but then it ended up working out. Cause like I fixed myself and then I played indie ball with another host family in 2018.
Wow.
I was like, I can't get a break from these host families. I want an apartment myself. They say, hey, we don't have an apartment here. I'm like, okay, fine. But it was way better situation. Had our own kitchen downstairs, it was a mansion. This is a beautiful house. And we had the whole downstairs to ourselves, ping pong table, everything. And
that's sweet.
Yeah, it was a blessing. And then
what's the relationship to the minor leagues and these indie leagues? Because earlier I heard you mention, you know, you were talking to your first indie coach and he was telling you, hey, just give me a month and I'll get you out of here. It sounds like there's some kind of agreement towards the league and these indie leagues. Like you have to put some time in over here to get better and then we can send you back over there. Like what kind of relationship is that there?
Yeah. So the way it works is, it's definitely like a networking thing. Like, so most of these coaches have so many connections with like minor league or big league coaches and stuff. And usually, you know, every month or so minor league teams or organizations come knocking. They're like, hey, Coach, you got anybody for us? You know, you got any pitchers performing? Like, we can send a double A. I'm like, yeah, we have these guys. So then they'll take a look at them, then they'll send them over. I mean, I think I wasn't there before Indie Ball, but like they said that they used to have a partnership with certain teams, would like have like, you know, hey, this Indie Ball team has great relationships with the Chicago Cubs. I think I heard a rumor one time that the White Sox sent one of their top prospects to Indie Ball because they didn't have any room for him in the minor league. So they said, hey, we're going to send you over here. If you perform well, then we'll bring it back and stuff. So like, wow. There was that, like, I guess they're like, hey, we're going to send him to you guys and you just take care of him and then we'll bring him back. So that we'll, you know, just see what happens. I was like, okay, that's not a bad deal. I mean, it's the fields in Indie Ball are actually pretty nice. It's okay. Like, especially in the American Association, I played in a new stadium in Milwaukee. That was awesome. It was called the Milwaukee Milkmen. That was like their first season in 2019. And then they won the championship in 2020. So that was awesome. So
it's like a proving grounds, basically.
Yeah, it's almost like, it's just, think of it like as an extension of minor leagues in a sense. Because like you have a lot of like college kids that have nowhere to go. They want to play. They use that avenue to go, and then obviously it's a longer route to get to where they want to go, but it's still a way for them to get seen and stuff. I mean, I like it because, you know, say like you're not quite developed enough yet, you can just go to Indie Ball, like you're still like technically young enough to like still get exposure, and then like, hey, this guy just put on 20 pounds, he's throwing 95 now, like get him seen.
Would you say in Indie Ball it might be a little bit more like rougher with the like, there's no camaraderie there,
it's
versus like in the minor leagues?
Actually, I think it's the opposite. So here's
the opposite.
Yeah, so Indie Ball, you learn to have fun a little bit more. I mean, obviously it's almost kind of like being on a college team again, because you're in a team aspect where like you want to win,
right?
You want your guys to get picked up, like, hey, Jimmy just got picked up by the White Sox. Like, right. That's awesome, which is good for the Indie Ball team because that shows that it works. Like, hey,
some hope is there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's So it's a good indicator. Like, it shows, like, especially with the team that they get picked up from, like, hey, come to Sioux City. We guarantee we can get you guys seen and picked up. Right. So like that was the reason why I kind of went to Sioux City, because the guy had a lot of connections there. And he said like, hey, we move a lot of guys here. Like, I don't give a shit if we win or lose. My job is to get you guys out of here. Okay. Like, that's his goal.
Cool.
That is awesome. Like, he said that to me and I was like, okay, cool. Right. Which makes you more like less pressure about winning. It's just like, just go out there and play, and it, you know, it's the pure essence of there. So like, I really appreciated that experience for sure, but it definitely did humble me at that point.
Would you say most of those coaches were like that, though, where they actually wanted to get you out of Indy? There's some other guys.
Guy was an exception. Okay. The other guys were full on, like, in my opinion, like they took coaching philosophies from professionals and they just tried to adapt it and make it their own and stuff. And then they're like, hey, it's a culture here. We got to win, you know.
It's annoying, I guess.
Yeah, well, especially the league that I played in the next year, because I didn't do so well in Sioux City. I got sent to the Frontier League, which is like lower than that. So like the fact that I was in denial before, and then now it's like, crap, I'm now lower than where I was before. So like, it really upset me.
Talk about pressure, though.
I mean, yeah,
that's why I like for me personally, I haven't grown a team or anything like that, but I hear a lot of people that grow a team in real estate, or let's say you're an employer and you're looking to add employees to the corporation.
Yeah.
You want to hire athletes overall because they know how to adapt to pressure.
Yes.
They can take criticism.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, I mean, I only know baseball. I don't know much besides that, but I'm a little bit jaded, I guess you can say, but I feel that baseball in a way is a harder sport when you're trying to go to the professional level, because of what you're telling me right now, all these avenues to go to different leagues and go up and down and up and down, you know?
It's not as easy as everybody thinks. It's
course.
Like I said, it's not like football and basketball where you sign and you go straight to the show.
Let me actually read the statistic off from what I saw. Hopefully this is true. You'll know. Maybe you can tell me if I'm wrong or not. But basically it says high school players to get to the professional baseball.
I've heard this, yeah.
It ranges, though, supposedly.
Yeah.
From 0.02% to 0.5% of high school players will get to professional level.
Yeah.
And then for high school players to get to an NCAA university division, mm-hmm. In general, it's 5.6%.
Okay.
Division I baseball from high school, you're looking at 2%.
Wait, what was the one, that one before?
So from high school just to university baseball,
mm-hmm.
any like division, it's 5.6%.
Okay.
From high school to Division I baseball, it's 2%.
Yes.
And then from, this is a general is what they did. So if you're playing baseball NCAA, mm-hmm. to get to professional, it goes up 10%. It's 10% in general.
If you go to D1, right. Yes, yeah. That's about right. I mean,
that's really fucking low, though.
Yeah, it is low. Like, but it's
your chances
it's,
of becoming a professional baseball player is like very minimal.
Yeah, it's and then you get the guys that are drafted to make it to the show. It even's lower than that. So like, because you have to remember, like, there's a draft every year. New guys are coming in every year. That means all the guys that came in before, they get weeded out. They just get pushed back. Like for me, like I lasted 5 years, and I thought it was funny. I thought at the beginning, I thought it was kind of like high school, like, oh, I'm a freshman. Okay, next year I'll be a sophomore. Next year I'll be a junior. And then hopefully by the show, I'll be a senior. You know, as you get older, I should be going up the levels.
I mean, that's kind of logical.
Yeah. Well, obviously you have to perform too. Like you have to put up numbers. They're not just going to keep you around just because you're a nice guy. Yeah. I mean, it's a business, like, right. You know, and that's the kind of funny thing is that the Cardinals organization are very business oriented, that they're like, yeah, you're a nice guy, but like, what have you done for me lately? Like,
so it really is pretty cutthroat. Yeah. It's all number based.
Yeah.
And a big difference also is baseball really is, you know, for the most part, the world champions. Like you hear Super Bowl champions say we're the world champions, but obviously they're not, you know, coming from South America, you know, occasion or on a normal basis to go to the NFL. You're competing with the whole world to get MLB spots because it's the highest paid place, you know.
That's why, insane. Yeah. That's why I love the World Baseball Classic. I love, you know, it's kind of like the FIFA of, you know, mm-hmm. soccer, I mean, or baseball, but like it's, you know, I don't think people really like give baseball enough credit in terms of like everybody thinks like everybody's like, oh, it's an American sport. I'm like, actually, dude, mm-hmm. it's everywhere. Like even Dubai just started having a professional baseball thing. They just had a showcase in November and they're trying to get people over there to play baseball because it really is a popular sport. I don't think people give it enough credit.
Right.
I mean, you know,
but in the United States though, the popularity is like falling.
It is falling.
People, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is though?
I think it's just people are kind of sick and tired of like the slow play, I guess. I hear that a lot.
Well,
they've improved it with the clock and, right. you know, they're trying to, you know, improve like, you know, the base sizes or the mound being pushed back. I think when you start tinkering with, you know, like the legit rules of it, that's when people like you're weeding out like the people that really enjoy the game, they're still going to go. Like, you know, and nobody's going to lose sleep over it. I mean, people who go, it's like, oh, I got dragged here to watch a game. Like, I'm not going to sit here for 3 hours. Oh, it's extra innings. Great. Like, now I got to watch. Like, dude, then leave. Right. Go away. Like, I mean, like, I love watching baseball games. Like, it's hard for me to, like, kind of, though, enjoy it as a fan because, like, I kind of watch it as, like, all right, what is he throwing this guy right now? What would I do? Like, I'm dissecting it constantly. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, like, hard for me to get into that fan mindset because I'm there because I'm trying to learn.
Right.
It's, you know, it's like, oh, Mike Trout had another bomb. Like, oh, awesome. Like, okay, cool. That's the fan that we want. And, mm-hmm. you know, now we have like, okay, like, this is not like girls are be like, this is not the first date that I wanted. I didn't want to go to a baseball game.
Well, I mean, for some girls, they would enjoy that, though.
Yeah.
But, well, Andrew's heard, I actually have a solution to fix the MLB. I want to hear your thoughts on it.
I'd love to hear this.
Basically, what I would do is I would treat PEDs the way the DEA treats marijuana, where like I wouldn't say that we're not going to enforce anything, but we aren't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like those are fake piss tests. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And because we all know how hype baseball was when Mark McGwire was knocking.
Oh, seriously. If you look at like the attendance or everything back in the 90s or mid 80s, like everything, mm-hmm. like people, like, well, that's the thing. Like, so you go to watch football games to see big guys hurt each other, like just mm-hmm. like, gift and touch.
Right.
Why wouldn't you want to see a big guy hit a bomb like 530 yeah. feet? Like, you know, it, and I like, all right, first of all, like the whole like Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens steroid yeah. thing. Like, I mean, listen, just because you take it doesn't mean you're guaranteed to hit a home run. You still doesn't have to have, no, he was like, Barry Bonds is still a great player even before he took it. Like, he was still on a Hall of Fame career anyway. Right. And then in Roger Clemens' case, like, yeah, he started throwing harder, but like, he still has to throw the ball over the plate. He could have been taking everything. He could have had the same issues as me. Yeah. And you know, it's still like, it doesn't guarantee you success.
Right.
Yeah. It gives you like some advantage in terms of speed and then bat strength, but like hitting a baseball is so hard. It is so hard.
They say that's one of the hardest things.
There was 400 milliseconds. It's 400 milliseconds is how long it takes like a 90-mile-per-hour ball to go from the mound to the plate. That's also how long it takes you to blink.
Yeah.
And 500 milliseconds is a half a second, right? So it's below that. And it takes 150 milliseconds to swing the bat. So you're basically swinging before the pitch leaves the arm. And it's kind of like fighting where they're judging from the shoulder movement to see uh-huh. where the punch is coming, if a punch is coming. And I was actually wondering, for you as a pitcher, do you try to hide, disguise your arm movements so they don't know what type of pitch is coming? Just like...
A great question. So like we do this thing where it's tunneling. We're trying to make our pitches look as similar as we can until the last second they break. You know, a person who does really well at this is actually Garrett Cole. If you like look at his footage and stuff, like hit all his stuff is just staying on one plane, and then at the last like right where you say like, oh, they have to make a decision. That's where, gotcha. Like that's where the balls break.
Wow.
Obviously everything is off of arm speed. Like it's not just the grip. The grip does the work, but you have to sell it with your arm speed and stuff. I mean, a lot of guys hide the ball really well behind them. I try to almost break my hands almost like late because my arm is super fast. So I can get away with it. It's actually funny when you said the statistics about how fast you need to react. That's from 60 feet, 6 inches. Yeah. It's actually probably you have to react faster than that because the second you're leaving the mound from that 60 feet, you're actually getting closer to the plate.
Like 5 feet closer.
Yeah. So once you let go of it, you're technically 5 feet closer to the guy.
Right. I didn't think
so
about
like,
that.
You know, the fact that you have to react to that kind of speed is ridiculous. I tried hitting when I was with the Cardinals. Since I had a hit that was a National League team, I had to hit. I was a lefty, so I thought, okay, right hand, I have a good view of hitting a 92-mile-an-hour fastball. I'm like, dude, that's a joke. I can't hit that. Like, I never got to hit really much in high school or college, so like I didn't get the tools to like be successful in that category. But it is so hard. I just tried not to strike out.
Like, I imagine that when you're batting and you're a pitcher, but you're also batting like in the National League, it gives you an advantage to from a perspective how they're feeling that incoming ball come in, right?
Yeah. I mean,
you're able to at least experience that.
Yeah, no, it definitely gives you like you definitely respect the hitter a little bit more. Obviously, like, you know, when you're on the mound, it's a totally different mindset. You're like, I'm here to get you
out. Tell us about that mindset.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's
I've never been a pitcher. I've only, you know,
it's honestly it to me, it's like the best like sport one on one fight because
that's why I love baseball.
Because, you know. Obviously, you know, you're up there with a rock. He's up there with a stick. It's just pure competition. Like, right. I'm trying to get you out. He's like, no, you're not. And it's like, it's basically a battle of wills. And whoever kind of like the bat can take on forever. You've seen like 17 pitch at bats and stuff. And it's like the second a guy like wavers a little bit, that's when the other guy has the advantage. I try to get them out as quickly as possible, like within 3 to 4 pitches. Bam, 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 done. Because you have to remember, like, if you're a starter, you have to go 5, 6, 7 innings,
right.
And every pitch counts. Because especially now with pitch counts, they're so strict now. Nobody's going 150 pitches anymore. Right. So like you have to go like 15 pitches at most sometimes. And then even then you're lucky enough to get five innings out of it.
Right.
And then they come in and bring the bullpen guys in. So it's, you know, you want to be quick and efficient, and that's what I try to do. But when you get a guy out, it's like, it's like, I want more of that. It's like, it's so fun, especially if it's a friend that, you know, right. or someone who, you know, has gotten your number a few times. Like this is the thing that really upsets me about baseball is that I can strike out a guy 7 out of 10 times and that guy gets 3 hits off me. That guy's a Hall of Famer and I'm not. And that's the thing that bugs me. It's like, hey, I got 70% of the time. Like, well, 300 average is pretty damn good.
Very good.
I mean,
at what point do you want to intimidate them though? Because, you know, sometimes you want to get the ball a little bit more into intimidate them. Like, is there a particular moment when you have to do that?
So I don't really do that with my pitches. I do that with more of like my body language. So like I kind of mad dog them like a lot. Like I just kind of like just, I don't show any emotion. Right. I just kind of like just, I almost look at them dead in the eye and stuff. And the funny thing is in Mexico, they do this thing where they kind of like nod their head to you. Like they acknowledge like, hey, like good luck kind of thing.
And
respect. And I'm like, I'll do that if I know you personally, but if you do that to me, I'm like, no, I don't like that. It's kind of like a formal green, like best wishes to you. I'm like, I'm like, I'm here to get you out. Get like, that's my job. Like you're here to get me out. None of this buddy crap, you know? So I do think it's one-on-one. It's like tennis. It's like, you're going back and forth, but like, you know, baseball, like I said, hitting a baseball is so hard. It's really hard. And it's honestly the one thing that I feel like most athletes don't like understand, like how hard it is. Right. I think we saw a commercial, like Derek Jeter was talking to Patrick Mahomes and stuff. And Patrick Mahomes said, hey, hitting a baseball is really hard.
Yeah. Right.
And Patrick Mahomes is very athletic. He's actually very good. Like he actually, I think, got drafted by a professional team.
I think so.
So like that for him to say that, you know, that just kind of shows, you know, that how hard it is. Cause you have to understand, like as a kid, you're growing up jumping, running, throwing something, but you're not doing this. This is hand-eye coordination. This is a very unorthodox movement. Like unless, you know, you're using a sword, but like you're not using both hands.
Do you think that requires a lot of like a natural ability of talent versus skill to be a good batter?
Because
I think it's kind of talent.
I think to a certain point, like a kid can have a natural like eye tracking ability and stuff, and then you have guys that just have naturally, but like you can still work at it. I feel like it's like golf. I feel like you can get better at golf, but like, you know, obviously golf balls are staying still, but for you to like make good contact and stuff, like not strike out, like that's still impressive. Like I know guys that that don't hit for power, but they just put the ball in play. It's still like relatively impressive. Like, there's a guy in the big leagues right now. I think he's with the Marlins. He's like the batting title holder. Is like Luis Arraez or whatever. He's hit like 330 the last like 2-3 years and stuff. He doesn't hit home runs. He hits like 3 or 4 every year. Nice. Yeah, that guy hits for average.
Right.
So like, you know, I feel like nowadays, like teams are starting to piece together, like, okay, we need our sluggers and then we need our guys that can get on base and hit for average and stuff. It's like, you know, there's no more, I call this West Coast ball. Well, actually we're going to go back to college. I mean, you grew up playing on the West Coast, obviously.
Right. Is it true that a lot of people like West Coast players from like the East Coast?
No.
West?
So
I was told that constantly in college.
So West Coast, in my opinion, is known as playing small ball. And then East Coast is more of like, all right, get three guys on big bomb boy is gonna hit a bomb for us. It's like nowadays West Coast ball is like, all right, get a guy on, sack him over, hit a double, like kind of just playing chess. And then
interesting,
that's what I've noticed when I was growing up. Like, you know, everybody's like, okay, we're gonna put a bunt on and then we're gonna hit a sack fly and then get the guy over, all right, got our run. So I think most of the best players come from California, Arizona, Texas, Florida, and New York like in my opinion, because those are the big, like, you know, hubs. Like, that's where all the showcases are. Those are where all the big time colleges are usually at. That's where the most scouts are. Like, you, that's the thing. Like, everything is about exposure. It's like, because I went to one in Florida when I was in high school. I we bought a plane ticket. Like, I wanted to invest. Like, listen, you want to make something of your career, you got to invest a little money to get seen and stuff. That's why Perfect Game is so successful, because like they you know, market themselves so well. Like, hey, we're going to get all these kids, and we'll promise that they'll get some exposure, at least for colleges.
Yeah, I played in Texas, and to your point earlier about. One thing I learned is, you know, my dad was very, like, he promoted anything I wanted to do. So he told me, hey, you can play any sport you want. And I made a very big mistake because, you know, I started off playing football, tackle football in New Orleans, and then, you know, went to basketball, did hockey. And then by the time I'm in my, like, sophomore year, hey, I want to play baseball. And, you know, I was good on defense, but as far as hitting, I tear it up in the batting cage, but all of these kids had been growing up playing baseball.
You felt like left behind a little bit, or like you're like late to the show a little bit?
I think so.
Absolutely. Like, sure. I just didn't have all this experience that these people had at swinging this bat at these pitchers. You know, I didn't go from T-ball to that point. You know what I mean? I started there. And yeah, our team was great. And I, like, we went to a championship, and I, like, didn't go on purpose because I didn't want the team to suck. You know what I mean? Like, I intentionally bailed on that game.
Very commendable of you. I mean, that, yeah. I mean, yeah, get that ring. Like, for me, I could never, I don't know if I could ever train myself to be a hitter. Like, it's funny. My parents have this like dream, like, okay, well, why don't you can go back and be as a hitter or an outfielder. I'm like, make it back to the show. I'm like, I'm not Rick Ankiel. Like, I'm not going to go back and be like, a reborn player. There's no way. I'm a pitcher. Like, my body is like shifted, and like, I can't, like, my shoulder is never going to be like back like this. It's constantly going to be slunched over like this, no matter how many chiropractor people I see. I'm just built.
You feel
like
you had to sacrifice yourself to make it far in the baseball world. You have to sacrifice your body, and you might not make it there in time, based on how long your body holds up in that process of trying to win at this level.
It's a high risk, high reward gig for me. Like, I had to sacrifice so much growing up. I didn't have a social life. I never went out. I never partied. I never hung out with friends, really. I just kind of stuck with my, like, hey, listen, I want to be a professional baseball player. This is what I have to do. This is what I have to sacrifice. I have to do this. And, like, people kind of, like, took that the wrong way sometimes. They would think, like, oh, Kurt doesn't want
friends
to,
and all that?
Yeah, like, oh, Kurt's too good to be hanging out and drinking with us. I'm like, no, I was saving myself for my next big thing. Like, I did, like, and it was high school. Like, I didn't give a crap about high school. Like,
so to some people, that's life.
Yeah, I know. That's like, oh, yeah, like, that's kid high school. Right, ball. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you know.
You grew up in HB, right?
Yes. Okay. I went to Edison. Okay. But then when I got to college, that's where I blossomed. That's where, like, I was able to, like, hey, all my hard work is finally paying off. I actually, now I can reap the benefits. I can actually, you know, have a beer a couple, you know, once in a while. I can hang out with friends that I know who have worked just as hard as I have to get to this point. Like, I was surrounded by guys that, like, gave a shit. Like, and that's why we ended up winning a championship, because we bought into everything. And that's why all the guys that got drafted, they all made it to the show. Like, they, like, well, besides me, but, like, I was surrounded by good guys that, you know, made me look good. That's kind of like how
you got very close, though.
I was close.
You were in AAA.
Yeah.
Cardinals.
But like I said, you feel like you're knocking on the door, but there are guys below you that are younger. They got more talent than you, and they're just, the front office is just waiting for something to click in them. And like, if they just stop walking a few more guys, if they just start throwing this pitch more, they're going to leapfrog you, and you're going to be like left on the back burner. That's why it's like, oh crap, I have to really, like, do something special. And it's funny, like, so you're gonna find this very interesting. So this is like right when analytics started coming into, like, they were in their infancy a little bit. They so back in 2015 or 16, they started breaking down like ground ball rate, strikeout rate, and walk rate. And they said, if you can do two of these things, you're going to make it to the show, like easily.
Right.
So they said, they were like looking at my numbers. They sat me down like, all right, Kurt, your walk rate is 3%. I don't walk many guys. Your ground ball rate is 58%. Pretty, that's really good. Mm-hmm. But my strikeout rate was 14%. And
it's normal for strikeout.
Strikeout rate's anything above like 20, 24, and then sometimes 30. So what they don't tell you is, yeah, you have to do two of these things. What they really care about is walk rate and strikeout rate. They don't care about ground ball rate. Oh, and I'm like, what? You
learn that later?
Yeah. You told me I was supposed to be successful in two of them. He's like, yeah, but what does that tell me if you're giving up 58% ground balls? That means some of those balls are going to trickle through the infield. That doesn't, like, you don't factor that in. Yeah, you get weak contact, but that doesn't guarantee that's an out.
Right.
Like, your saving grace is you don't walk anybody. Like, that's, like, yeah, you get hits and stuff. You don't let the inning progress.
Right.
But you also can't get that strikeout where you need it. Like, you got guys on second and third, and you got to get a punch out with one out. You don't have, like, and that's where I was like, oh, wow. So you lied to me. So I was just kind of I tell that to everybody. Like, listen, work on walk rate and strikeout rate. Like, yeah, get your ground balls if you can. That's why Mexico is so crucial, because nobody gives a shit about strikeouts. They care about just getting outs. Nowadays, we're like, when I go play there, because I'm a bullpen guy, I was a closer last year. Right. So I didn't strike out many guys. I just got a lot of weak contact and balls did not go anywhere there. So like I would give up a hit, I'd get a double play, and it would be over. And I'd be like, okay, there's my ground ball rate statistic right there.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's totally different now. The games now has changed so much. You can go onto Twitter and you'll see guys putting up videos of themselves like, hey, here's so-and-so. I throw 92 to 96 with a slider that breaks this. And it's a marketing thing. They don't even have to go to college anymore. They just – all you have to do is just show them to social media, and someone's like, hey, this guy just
pick him up.
Well, yeah, if you saw this video a few years ago, this guy went to a baseball game and he pulled down like a 97 mile an hour fastball on that throwing thing where you go, like, you throw in the cage or whatever, and the guy gets signed.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, I gotta go to a baseball game.
What do you think about, like, someone coming up though in high school, they're really good? Would you still recommend at this point to go to university, Division One, and play?
Or
would you tell them something different?
Well,
based on what you just told me now.
So I had the same opportunity when I was in high school. My coach, actually, one of my travel ball coaches, he kind of keeps giving me shit about this. He's like, because I was in the sixth round, I signed for like 150 or whatever it was. And the guy skipped, I could have gotten you 250 out of high school. And I'm like, yeah, but I also wouldn't have had the experiences. I wouldn't have had my degree. I wouldn't have had I wouldn't have been able to win a championship and all that. And he's like, yeah, that's all well and good, but you would have been in the system earlier. You would have probably gotten more hands-on, like getting better with all your stuff. Cause I was a two-pitch guy in college. So nothing really changed for me until I got to pro ball. So I could have had those 3 years to like work on stuff. And I'm like, my biggest regret was not going back for my senior year of college. I wish I didn't sign out of my junior year.
Would it give you more time?
No, I would have. I just would have liked to just experience college one more year. We won a championship, big dog on campus, right. And then I would have still probably been in the same spot I would have been like anyway. I was putting up good numbers as a senior. Probably I would have gotten drafted like, you know, not maybe top 10 rounds, but something close to that. And I still would have probably gone up to AAA and been in the same situation. But I would have had my degree 1 year earlier, and I would have been able to, like, you know, if I say like I didn't pan out with baseball, I could have been able to find a job somewhere probably quicker. But
how does that work though, in terms of like when you're in that situation, when you had to make that decision, is there anybody there that gives you that advice, or do you go to
I was projected to go top three rounds my junior year. That's at least what my agent told me. And then I was on the phone like with my dad, my coaches. And I was like, dad, like, I thought I was going to be, it was like the third day or second day or whatever it was. I thought I was going to go in the top whatever. And I was like, should I go back to school? And he's like, honestly, like, just follow your heart. Just go with your gut. Like, you know, like, he's like, hey, listen, all your buddies are signing. None of them are coming back. Like, you should go. Like, you want to go off into the sunset. You won a championship. Right. You left on a high note. Like, go. And I'm like, okay. So, but it just would have been nice just to experience, like, senior day. Like, you know, get a jersey in a frame. You know, go out there with my parents. Like, you know, like kind of like how football players do on their senior day, kind of thing. But, you know, your original question is, like, should a kid go to college or go to pro ball? I think it just depends on, like, did he get drafted in the first round? Yeah. Is he, you know, is he right there in the head? Is he mature enough? Like, does he want to go to college?
Right.
I mean, a lot
of it is that though, right?
Yeah.
Mental.
Yeah. So, yeah. Cause like you gotta have to remember, if you're giving a kid like $3 million as an 18-year-old, like, they're not going to know what to do with that. Yeah. They're going to be like, I'm going to buy a car. I'm going to buy the biggest truck I've ever seen. And like, and then they just, unless they're smart, obviously they're, you know, if the kid's going to Stanford on a scholarship and, you know, he signs in the first round, like, obviously he knows what he's doing, I think. But
those are the exceptions.
I also think you have to work on your negotiation. Like, all right, hey, like, I want this team to pay for our schooling. He was supposed to go to Stanford. I want him to still go to Stanford. So, like, if you can somehow negotiate that into your deal, like, that's what I did. Like, I got the Cardinals to pay for the rest of my schooling. That's, you know, that's worth it then. But
yeah,
I truly think, like, if you're not ready to take on, like, those big boy responsibilities, like, you're in the workforce now, you're getting W-2s every year. You're, you know, you're paying for rent. If you're not with a host family, you have to make decisions because you're not with mommy and daddy anymore. You're off there in the Midwest, like with
in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. In the middle. Yeah. Like, you got, like, I don't know how to cook. I don't know how to, like, you're
that's tough. Cause you got,
I didn't know how to make mac and cheese when I was a freshman. I was like, I'm like, mom, how do you make this? I got to boil water. Jeez. And then finally I figured it out, but like, that's the kind of stuff. Like, I didn't do laundry. My mom did my laundry. I didn't like it. So like, it's, you know, it's a grow up thing. You want to go to school. Like, I want kids to know, like, college is good. Like, go get your degree. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you know, baseball is still going to be there, but you have to also put the work in for it. Like, you don't just think like, okay, well, I made it. I don't have, cause I saw so many guys in college, like, think like, you know, they're just happy to be there. And our coach, Andy Lopez, he's probably one of the all time great college coaches. He used to say this: if a guy was there not putting the work in, but he was just a good, like, just there to, like, you know, just take up a spot, he would go look at him. He's like, hey, listen, you're a nice guy in a nice place. Have a nice time. And that's it. And then he wouldn't talk to him anymore. Oh, like, he would just kind of like, cause he knew, like, all right, he's not, I don't need to tell him anything, but my coach would, you know, burn me. He's like, ah, I don't know, Kurt, you don't look like a Friday night guy anymore. You look like a midweek guy. And I'm like, oh, and he would fire me up. So
yeah.
It would definitely, it definitely made you more mature, got you tougher, gave you tougher skin. Yeah. You know, like, I'm so used to hecklers. Like, I don't, like, nothing. Everybody can call.
Yeah.
Especially in Mexico now. Like, I can sometimes hear,
they
like,
so much.
Yeah. But I can't fully understand them at the same time. So good. I'm like, okay, cool.
Call you know, there's. Everyone. You keep bringing up Mexico, and I love it because there's this Vice documentary about basketball tournaments in Mexico. And I'll give it to Andrew so he can pass it along to you because it's probably my favorite documentary. And a lot of the players that are in there are, like, for instance, people who got, you know, who didn't make it in the NBA very long, or they were from the G League, and they go out there and they compete in these tournaments in Mexico. And, but some of them are just like these traditional families in Mexico where the dad passed the gift off to the son. And so some of them are competing, like, they're leaving their house, they're paying to get into the tournament. And if they don't win, they can't afford, like, groceries for their family. And you could imagine how competitive basketball is when your livelihood for your family depends on it. And they're competing against some of these folks that might've washed out from the NBA.
Yeah.
And it's like six episodes. It's honestly just like one of my favorite documentaries of all time. And so I kind of, from watching that, you know, I'm kind of envisioning that when you're talking about baseball in Mexico, I would imagine there's probably some similarities.
Yes. You know, yeah. For sure. Cause, like, you have to understand, like, especially like in other countries like DR, Venezuela, this is there's no like, oh, I'm going to be a lawyer. It's like, no, I'm a baseball player or nothing, like, or I'm going to be making houses. Like that's literally it. They, you know, if they have a chance at playing professionally, whatever level that is, they're going to take it like that. Mm-hmm. Like, especially if you're a young, like 15, 16 year old, their goal is to get off that island. Like they to get to the States to make something of it. Cause even the family's like, go, like, we don't want you to be here. Like they want them to follow their dream and all that stuff. So like,
and then hopefully send money back. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
That's rough, dude.
It's really, I mean, cause I've seen it for 3 years and stuff. You see like, you know, taco stands everywhere, just people like, you know, buying the bare minimum just to even like maybe hopefully make a profit out of something, like, you know, and I wish that there was more opportunities like in Mexico for people. I mean, some people work all day just to work for a ticket just so they can watch us play, like, it's
still a lot of poverty
out. Yeah, because like even like, you know, 40 pesos, it's like, that's like $2 down there. That's like, that's a lot to them. Yeah. Like, you know, and it's, you know, I really wish that like we were able to like kind of give back more. Like I want to keep playing as much as I can and stuff. And like, I always try to like think like, hey, is there anything we can do for the community? Like, can we like, is there league games that we can go to? Like, just to, like, you know, push it on them, like just something. And it's like, because I feel like we do that here, I think like we do a pretty good job, but like,
not out there.
No, not out there. It's a very like nobody gives a shit. Like it's
But that's why those guys have a lot of grit and they can become dangerous to compete.
They can be because they have a chip on their shoulder. They want to they want to get out of there.
That's what I want to ask you. When you go out to like places like Mexico or DR or wherever, and you're out there, can it get dangerous at all? And what I mean by that is, I have a friend who was playing professional soccer in Mexico, and he was an American, right?
Yeah.
And the other people that were from there would try to hurt him to get him out.
Okay.
Like, do people try and hurt you?
No, not on the field. Obviously, in the back of your head, you're in a foreign country. You don't speak the language. You're playing a sport where the job, the openings are very limited. You're like, why does this guy get to come over and take, you know, someone's spot where I've been working my whole life to just to get to this point? And yet, all because he's got AAA experience and he's able to like just swoop in and take it. It's a business again. It's, you have to win. You like, even teams in Mexico know, like, hey, we want to get the best players from wherever they may be to win games and stuff. That's how they generate revenue. So like, you know,
makes sense.
And obviously,
isn't there enough players to do like a Mexican, like, why, if I was the commissioner of the MLB, why wouldn't I say, all right, in Mexico, we're going to have our own league there. And then, you know what, we're going to try to do the same thing in Canada and all these other countries. And then we will have a world championship once every 4 years. Is there not enough players? Is there not enough fans? Why wouldn't they do something like that?
Well, there are a lot more players now floating around since the MLB cut basically all the short season teams underneath. So now you got like 120 extra players just floating around, just like, you know, I get hit up all the time on Instagram or on Twitter, like, hey, is Saltillo looking for a player? Da-da-da. Like, there are guys looking for work. Like,
that's
they,
where you're at now.
Yeah, that's Saltillo. Saltillo. Yeah. Saltillo. So that's
Mexico.
Yeah. Great city. Like, it's like near Monterey. I don't know how familiar you guys are with
Monterey.
Mexico
is a very rich,
it's Americanized. Like, I honestly felt like I was in Arizona because like it's very industrial. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's, that's actually one of my favorite cities.
I think it's the second.
Is it on the coast?
It's like right below, Texas. It's like, if you go to Texas and just go directly down, it's like, traveling is it's just horrible there because in Saltillo there's no airport. We have to go to Monterey to like use the airport. So there's not many like airport hubs. It's like Mexico City, Guadalajara, and Tijuana, and then Cancun, which is another team. Cancun looks great. Hey, but
good note though, if you're in Mexico, like in San Diego, we have an airport, the Tijuana airport.
Yeah,
you actually don't have to cross the border.
CBX
go. Yeah, CBX will let you.
I use that all the time.
Absolutely. And if you ever wanted to, you know, obviously we can't go San Diego to Cuba, but you can from there.
Yeah.
You can go to
for $18, you can cross.
Yeah, you can cross there and then it'll take you to Cancun.
Well, because it's safer. It's safer. It's just, you know, because nobody wants to get in their car and drive all. Actually funny. I was when I got released by the Cardinals and stuff, and my buddy Mejia was playing for Monclova, another Mexican team. I was trying to play with him, and then I was trying to play for Tijuana because Tijuana is obviously closer to home. Mm-hmm. I can go over the board. They give you like a century pass, and you could just hop back and forth.
Right.
And I was like, that makes the most sense. I would love to play, but the Toros are like a big market team. Like they get the big leaguers. They get like all the guys that, you know, are mm-hmm. just leaving and they have the money. So like it's, if you have like Mexico City is another one where the owner is part owner of the Padres, actually. That's why they had a couple exhibition games in Mexico City.
Right.
It's that place that's one of the nicest stadiums I've ever been in. It's beautiful.
I wanted to ask you that too. How has baseball helped you in terms of like your mindset for the workforce, and then also all the traveling you did? Because you've been in Mexico, Italy, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've been in Australia, yeah. I think you said.
Australia, too? I was there for winter ball for a little bit. That was a fun experience, just because, like, I mean, when someone said, "Hey, you want to play for us for Australia?" Like, I don't even care about the money. It's just more like, hey, I get to go to Australia.
Especially Italy.
Yeah, Italy. Yeah. Italy was an experience. I mean, it was actually right after the COVID year, and I'm trying to get on the flight because COVID, you know, policies were still like pretty strict. Like, yeah, I had to get a vaccine. Yeah. And the lady didn't even almost let me on the flight because she didn't believe me when I said I was going there for baseball. Cause I had a worker's visa mm-hmm. and stuff all ready to go. And they're like, I didn't even know baseball even was in Italy. And I'm like, neither did I, but I'm still going there. But yeah, but I got on the plane. It was like me and two other people with the pilots. And we land. Yeah. Great food. Like you can eat so much and you don't feel like crap. Like, nothing. No, it's all authentic food. It's just, I mean,
the best thing about it is like the best stuff is actually kind of the cheapest stuff too. Like,
yes, even in Mexico,
that's a good point. You know, Italy and Mexico have a lot in common with cuisine. You know, it's very like they're almost similar, but they're not. It's a very weird thing.
No, it's it's obviously two different cultures, but you're getting more bang for your buck because, like, you know, I can spend $5 in Mexico, I can get great tacos. Like, and the funny thing is, if you took that business and put them in California, they do fine. Like, they'd actually be able to upcharge it. Like, it's really good. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. that's why I think you see a lot of food trucks around LA and stuff. They just like, hey, I mean, I can make a killing off this thing.
But let's be honest, San Diego has better Mexican food than LA. I mean, come on, we all.
What do you think about that?
I mean,
I don't know.
I think it's an objective fact.
LA has got a pretty deep demographic of like cuisine. I mean, you're near the border though of Mexico, so you guys can get more crowd.
That's what I'm saying.
That is true.
I think the closer you are, the better it is.
Yeah, that's true. Those tortillas stay warmer when they come over. no, but I mean, it's honestly, like I was telling Andrew earlier before this podcast, like Italy was supposed to be my like last hurrah, but then I found out like, hey, Team of Mexico wants you. Do you want to go? And I left. Like, Team Italy though was like really upset though, because like they're like, why are you leaving us? I'm like, because this is like the Yankees calling me and I need to go. So like, I'm not, you guys are paying me in pasta and pizza. That's not going to pay for the bills back home.
Right.
And they were like, they wished me luck, but they didn't like that I just left. But the funny thing is the money down in Mexico is it's crazy. Like they pay players like five figures down there. Like it's nothing. And it's some guys even make over 20 grand. And I'm like, mm-hmm. oh my God, because you have to remember, some people play winter ball too. So the guys can make like 60, 70 grand in summer ball, and they can go to winter ball and make more money because mm-hmm. when you go to winter ball, I guess they make more money in winter ball. I still don't understand how that's possible, but they make more money in the DR, Venezuela.
Yeah, I wonder why.
like yeah, that money. It's crazy because like I this game has given me so much. I've loved playing and it's fun. I used to love playing just because I liked playing and competing and stuff, but now it's like the financial is starting to kind of finally catch up with the passion a little bit, which right. is finally something that I've been trying to work towards. And you know, like I said, you just got to be patient. Like, and if you chase something long enough, something good will come from it. So, I mean,
have you thought about documenting it so that you'll have a career after a career, like start documenting your experience now, for instance, on YouTube. And then Trevor Bauer has a really good YouTube channel where he kind of, he's been documenting since he's been in the Dodgers, but this journey you're going on, you're in Mexico. I'm telling you, it's an interesting journey that a lot of people would like to learn about.
No, I mean, I'm not technologically savvy like Bauer is, like with, GoPros and, drones and stuff. But like, I think if you have like the material and you have a story and I think a lot of people are making good money off of social media now. It's crazy. Right. Like, I mean, I honestly, I have a good feeling about this podcast. I feel like, especially with more people coming into it and like getting an inside mm-hmm. scoop of like what it is like, I think it's a good indicator of like, wow, baseball is a grind. People like, people have to claw their way up and stuff. Like finally, like a few years ago, housing is finally becoming available for the young guys that like can't afford it. Cause like there are guys that get drafted for like $5,000 and they can't afford to live in a nice apartment like all these other guys that got signed for like millions of dollars. Right. And then finally, I guess like last year, they finally upped the player salary from like, now it's like 40,000 to 60,000.
So you can like, barely afford like an apartment?
No. Like, well, the thing is like your salaries back in the day were like based off where you were at the level. So like low A, I was making 1,600 a month. And then every year you get like a couple hundred bucks extra.
I see.
So now guys don't have to work at a grocery store in the off season. They can train, they can get bigger and stronger and they don't have to worry about, thinking like, oh crap, like I have to do this. Oh no, I actually have money coming in still. The Brewers are still paying. Like, okay.
So being like a little bit of level at ease.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I wish they did that when I was playing. I wouldn't have had to feel like, because my parents were always like, are you going to get a job? I'm like, no, I want to work out. I want to train. That's the good thing about living at your parents' place for a little bit though.
You save
money. But if I would also advise kids, when they do sign, invest your money, at least half of it, or at least a sum of it. Cause I invested half of it with my uncle. He works for Morgan Stanley and it's constantly growing, Yeah. And
you're comfortable like with where your future is heading. Like you're not going to be in trouble as soon as no team wants you to play anymore.
Well, that's the thing. Like this could possibly be my last year, it's always been a scary thought. Like I've always, I've always put it in the back of my mind, but being married and having a kid, it kind of really like puts perspective now. Like, okay, right. I can't leave for 3, 4, 5 months out of the year every time. I have to see my kid grow. I need to be there for my kid. You know, no matter how good the money is, you have to make sacrifices. My wife has made sacrifices for me, and I give a lot of credit to her because, not many wives put up with this stuff. Like it's, I've seen many people get divorced over this, like, oh, you're picking baseball over me. Like, I'm like, well, I'm here to pay the bills. Like, so you don't have to work and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, but you also have to be there, as a father figure to be there. And, my wife, she makes a damn good living. She's the breadwinner right now. I mean, I make travel money. Like I make trips to Europe money. Like, hey, let's put this away and we can have a good trip out of it.
Me and Andrew both have very successful partners. So I think we can relate to you on that as well.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely takes away pressure and stuff like that. Like I don't have to perform as great as I can to
risks.
I don't have to be as good as I have to be, but I mean, I wish I met my wife earlier in my career because she definitely would have kept my head on straight. I mean, she definitely opened me up more to God a little bit more. Like I was in a very like low place in my life. Cause like I said, the yips, I didn't know where I was. I was like, do I keep going? But she told me like, listen, God has a plan, follow his plan. You know, everything happens for a reason, you know? And it really helped me learn to like take advantage of the opportunities that I have in this moment, instead of thinking about where I should be, instead of just focusing on like where I am right now. So like, that's like control what you can control. That's a big baseball thing. Like, you know, cause I'm so used to being in control on the mound all the time, but like, there are things outside of the baseball field that I can't control. Like I can control my emotions, but I can't control what coaches are thinking about me. I can't control my teammates. I can't control, you know, the world around me. If I can control, then I'm happy. Then I'm content. I can do what I need to do. But, you know, I really do give a lot of credit to my wife. She's definitely showed me a more clear path, and mm-hmm. you know, we thank God every day that you know, I'm still able to play this game that I love, and you know, our son is healthy, and
that's great.
Yeah, so like that's really honestly the best thing. Nothing is honestly better than, you know, having a kid. I mean, especially like, I'm happy it's a boy. Like I can play catch with him someday and actually
right. Yeah, you don't have to worry about what the world does to your boy like you would a girl. You have to worry about what your boy does to the world.
Yeah, I you know, my wife wants another kid. She wants a girl, so I'm like, I hope we can give her a girl.
Yeah.
Please.
You know, it's funny, your story, like the experience you just mentioned. You know, yesterday I was listening to a podcast with Bill Ackman, who's a Wall Street guy, and he was on Lex Fridman. It's a great episode, by the way. But he was talking about his lowest moment when he was down $4 billion. And he was worried that, you know, there were basically criminal charges coming after him. And he was just at his lowest place. And then he met who's now his wife. And this is back in 2017. Now this guy is like one of the most famous guys on Wall Street.
Yeah.
And he's one of the most successful guys on Wall Street. But he was talking about how he met his wife and he learned a lesson. And I think you might have, you know, learned the same lesson in that process. And maybe not have said it out, but he learned at that moment the way to get from that negative $4 billion, from all that, mm-hmm. those problems, was to just do a little bit every day to make the situation better. Just do a little bit every day. As long as every day you're doing a little bit to make everything better, eventually it'll compound, which is interesting because he's like a Wall Street guy. So it's like interest compounding, mm-hmm. and eventually you'll get out of your situation. That was what he learned in that experience.
I think a lot of people just kind of think like the end result way too quickly. They don't think of the process. Exactly. They kind of like, okay, if I can just get to this part, then I'm fine. But like, okay, do you know what it takes to just, you have to do a little bit of groundwork to get to where you want to be. Mm-hmm. That's why, like, you know, I ask kids all the time, like, how many of you guys want to win? They all raise their hands up so quickly. And mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, here's another question. Do any of you guys know how to win? And they're like, they all like say hard work and all that stuff. Like, yeah, it's hard work, but it's so much more than that. Like,
strategy, network.
Yeah, the sacrifices. Right. Like, you know, you can't have it all. Like, you have to have, you know, some give and take and stuff. I mean, like, I don't think I would be where I am if I did have a social life. If I did like make mm-hmm. more choices, like in high school, where I, you know, was a risk taker and stuff, like. That's why I'm so thankful for my family and my parents, the way they were, because they would mm-hmm. kind of like I would want to do something, but then they would say like, are you sure you want to do this? And I would really think about it. And I'm like, no, that's not the right decision. I really should be doing this and stuff. So I worked on school, baseball, like, and now it's given me everything that I wanted and stuff. And I'm hoping that my kid will be that my dream, like back when I was younger, was I wanted to like walk off the mound, see my wife and kid in the behind the dugout and wave at them. And like, wow. in the MLB or it could be Mexico. I mean, it's still there. Like I still want to do something with it, but it's just, mm-hmm. you know, like I said, sometimes you just have to, you know when like it's enough. Like it's like, I've done a lot in baseball where like, I feel like I can walk away and feel like good about it, but it's like, you still get that itch a little bit, because I had one of the best years of my life last year, and it's like, oh, I want to keep going. I could do better. Like, you know, and that's the hard struggle. It's like, that's, you know, hard, yeah, I know. It's not like a Michael Jordan or a Derek Jeter career where, like, you've accomplished so much. You don't have to play anymore. You don't have to. Like, nobody's going to fault. Like, nobody's going to lose sleep over it. But, like, they get to leave on their own terms and stuff. Like, you know, so I want to do the same thing. I would love to play until, like, someone ripped the ball away from my hand. Obviously, I'd play until I'm 45. But, you know, that's not going to happen. Right. I mean, I need to be there for my wife and family. And my wife is always assuring me, like, listen, something is going to come from this. Like, you're an athlete, a very strong-willed, driven athlete. People love that. Like, you know, I get contacts from every company, like from, like, insurance companies to, like, accounting to all these things. Like, hey, we need someone like you. Like, you're right what we're looking for. You're an athlete with, like, a hunger. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not familiar with financing or, like, insurance, but, like, I can definitely,
you have a mindset though.
Yeah. So. Which is crazy. Like, you know, you just need that mindset and you can be successful. That's the thing. Like, not many people have that mindset, which I feel like a lot of careers kind of fall short. If they just had that mentality, they could have been everything. Right.
You just need that edge.
And
The one thing you can't train is you can't train someone to care. And that's what I found is, and that's why when I'm hiring people, I'm always just trying to see if they actually care, because nothing else really matters in that. And, you know, for you, I'm pretty sure you've given this a lot of thought, but you know the roadmap in and out the minor leagues, the indie leagues. It just seems like you know where people should go in your situation. You know, have you considered being an agent or at least some sort of network?
So, I've thought about it. One of my teammates from a few years ago, he said he has a friend on the East Coast that handles clients on the West Coast. He's got a bunch of, like, big leaguers or minor leaguers or whatever. And he said he wanted someone to, like, kind of, like, oversee them on the West Coast. So, like, someone to, like, kind of, like, take them out to dinner, make sure, like, everything is going well for them. Like, is there anything you need? Like, not saying like a donut person, but, like, you know, just kind of like, hey, like, just watch over them. Just make sure that
player rep.
Yeah. A player rep. Right. Or I thought about, you know, I wanted to be a coach. I didn't know what level though yet, because I was bouncing around college or, you know, even minor leagues. Cause, like, I have a friend that works for Tampa Bay and he said that maybe 2025 I could get a gig there and stuff. It's just, I never really thought about it. That's the scary thing is, like, I thought about it, but, like, I never thought, like, that day would come kind of thing.
Right,
like,
right.
I was always like, I always felt like, you know, I was going to have this Peter Pan syndrome the entire time. Like, I don't want to grow up. I want to keep playing until, you know, I'm dead. So, like, you know, it's not obviously going to happen, but, like, it's like, if you still got it, you can do it. Sometimes it's like, you have to swallow your pride and ego and just say, like, no, like I said, it's enough. It's fine. So that's why I'm, like, hoping I have a good year this year. I can, you know, hold my head up high and, you know, unless the big leagues are calling me, then this would be it. So that's why, like, I got this glove this year, you know, dedicated to my son, got Cruz on there. So So I'm super pumped to use this thing.
As someone like you, it's a pro. For me, it took like 2-3 weeks when I was getting.
Oh yeah, it takes a while, especially the leather that you get.
It takes longer.
I mean, I usually just play catch with it naturally. Some people put it in the oven, which I don't know why. Like, they just put cream on it and just throw it in there like a piece of bread.
A lot of Latinos do that, no?
Yeah, a lot of guys, like
the players.
Some of them have hammers. Some of them, like, really? They.
Alex Rodriguez did some crazy.
It's funny because I did all the things that you guys are talking about right now when I was trying to get a glove ready. Hammering it, putting the oven, wrapping it. You know what I mean? I did all kinds of crazy stuff.
Putting 15 baseballs in there just to shape
it. Did that. Yep. I did it all.
Baseball players are weird, man. Like,
superstitious, too.
Oh, my God.
I always wore a necklace, and I still do even to this day.
So I used to watch the same movie for the love of the game and eat a bowl of mac and cheese before every game. Wow. And it never. And I used to sleep with the baseball. Like, I used to take this to my bed and put it, like, near me and stuff. And then when I got to college, my coach was like, no, stop, stop. That is weird. Don't do that anymore. Like, my teammates were trying to steal the ball away from me, just trying to mess with me. And I'm like, stop it. Like, this is like, and it, because this is the ball I would take into the game. And I would be like, all right, I built a relationship with it. I got to know it a little bit. I know every seam on this ball. And
then I like it. I think it's a good strategy.
And then the first pitch of the game, the guy fouls it off. And I'm like, shit. Like, I lost it. Now I got to build up a relationship all over again. It's my wife is constantly like, you guys are weird. Baseball guys are like locker room weird. Like I can't picture NBA or NFL players being like this. I'm like, yeah, it gets weird in the clubhouse. Like, just guys just like talking about random stuff. Like, it's just guys have weird superstitions. Like, I'm trying to remember one.
There's like so many of those.
Like, some guy like has to paint his toenails a certain color, like on his left side, because it like helps him drive off the mound or plate. I'm like, okay. I never thought of that one, but cool. It's just, you know, it's a fun game. It's an unusual game. It's, you know, that's why it's America's pastime. You know, it's because it's like apple pie. You know, it's that whole American dream thing.
Before, right. We wrap it up, I wanted to ask you, because this is full count, right? So, what was like your most like full count moment in your career where it was absolutely gruesome, but you prevailed? I'm sure you have a couple of those.
Oh my God! So full count moment. I gave up a 17-hit game one time in college. It was, as my coach would call it, the most horrible, beautiful game I've ever pitched. I threw 9 1/3 innings, and I gave up 17 hits.
Damn.
That is, and they're all singles. All singles. And it wasn't necessarily a 3-2 count moment, but it was the game testing you, like, because it all happened in one inning. So I gave up. Wow. I didn't give up 17 hits in one inning, but I gave up 17 hits collectively, and I gave up all my runs in one inning. And I just kept on pushing and pushing and pushing. And I pitched all the way up until the 9th inning. And then my coach said, hey, can you go out for the 10th? And I go, hell yeah, give it to me. It's mine. And we ended up winning. We ended up winning the game. And the coach on the opposing team was saying, I got to give that guy a lot of credit. He just kept coming after us, kept on coming after us. Nothing wavered him. Like it didn't matter if we got 5 hits in a row, or like, he just kept on coming after. And that's what I liked about it. I liked imposing my will on the guys. Mm-hmm. I liked, you know, putting pressure on them. They're like, dude, you got to get in the box. Yeah. So like that was a game that we had to win.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we won the next game, then we went to the College World Series, and then that snowballed us. So
that's kind of that starting point to get.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's not necessarily one count. It can be a game. Like, it can be the whole game. Like, you know, mm-hmm. People ask me like what's a good pitcher? I'm like, honestly, you're gonna have you break it up into threes. You're gonna have a third of your starts are gonna be great. A third of your starts are gonna be miserable. What do you do with that third? It's up to you. So it's like, you know, I just try to like do the best I can. I try to be 66% good, and I'll be good. So,
You feel like in that inning, like, there was never a moment for you where you were like, you know what, today's not my day. This inning is getting bad. You never had that feeling like, I hope they just pull me out right now. So
I had one of those. I did have one of those in Milwaukee in Indy Ball in 2019. I was really upset because obviously I wasn't having a great day. I was actually pitching really well. I pitched 5 innings, and then the guy said, hey, can you go out? And I was tired. I threw like 100 something pitches. Right. Because the guys were fouling off so much stuff off me, so they were just wearing me down. And I gave up like 5 runs. And after the 3rd run, I was like, are you guys not going to come get me? Like, I kept on looking into the – and nobody was warming up in the bullpen. I was like, you guys are leaving me out here to dry? And you know what the pitching coach said? Oh, my God, I am so sorry. I thought you were at 80-something pitches. You were at 120. Like, so the guy completely forgot I threw a whole other inning. He thought I was still, my pitch count was low. And then that like ruined my like stats for a while. And I'm like, God, I'm like,
yeah,
I was really upset. I was really upset. I was just like, wow, this is not professional at all. Like, even the even the bullpen guys are like, dude, get someone going. Like, we got to, because we were still trying to win the game. I think we were like up by like one run. And it was,
and that could actually probably injure you too, right?
Oh yeah. Well, that's the thing. In the minor leagues, they had a rule that if you threw anything over 30 pitches, you're done. You're not going out there for another inning. You're done. Yeah. Like, if you throw 30 pitches, you're done. Wow. I felt like I was way over that. But yeah, it's a grind. I mean, but I will tell you one story. It's actually messed up. This is the opposite. Remember I told you that indie ball teams are geared to get guys out.
Mm-hmm.
Some teams don't do that. Some teams will lie. And we were on a bus heading to an opposing team, and I was sitting in the front, like kind of in the front. I was behind the coaches. I was kind of like eavesdropping a little bit. I was like listening in, and our pitching coach said that he got a call from the Dodgers, and he said, "Hey, the Dodgers called. They want to know if we have anybody for Tulsa, which is Double A. Do we have anybody?" I was thinking Miles Smith, and Miles Smith was pitching unbelievably. Like, he was our closer. He was throwing like 94, 96, like just disgusting stuff. And we thought, I was thinking, Miles for sure.
Right.
And our coach goes, "No, we don't have anybody.
We
don't have anybody." And I'm like, I was almost going to be like, stop the bus. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you're saying no. And I told Miles this, and he goes, "Are you kidding me?" And I'm like, I swear to God, they said, "No, we don't have anybody." I told him, honestly, I was really upset they didn't say me, but I was like, but you're okay. Yeah.
You're using him so you don't sound like kind of conceited or anything. You're using the fact that they didn't grab him. Right, no, it's a good argument. That's a good argument tactic, because then they could just be like, "No, you suck. What are you talking about?" But if you're talking about someone else, you're an honorable person, and you're saying, "You guys didn't send him? Are you guys crazy?"
I was honestly really upset, because I was talking to our trainer at the same time, like, because I asked her, like, "Did you hear this?" And she goes, "Yeah." I'm like, so I wasn't the only person that heard this. Yeah. And
did you have a vendetta against them or something? Or
no, so I did. So apparently they just didn't want to do it, because it was like a personal thing. I was like, I don't know why, but whatever. I was really upset with it, because like I think about like guys that don't get that opportunity again, what they could have done with it. Like, some people do not deserve to be in, I'm not saying rotting in indie ball, but like, if a golden opportunity is presented, like, I don't care if we're on a winning streak and we're trying to win the championship. Like, dude, send him. Like, get him out of there. Like, you know,
the measure of a good boss, the measure of a good leader is when your
people... I would never know, but... Huh?
The measure of a good leader is when your people have an opportunity to grow somewhere else that they're not getting with you. The measure of a good leader is how much you support that, honestly. And then also, you know, your own succession plan, if you're training people up to go to the next spot. But that's how you can tell poor leadership right there, is if a better opportunity comes along and you don't have it for them and they're taking it, you know, if you're not going to support them in that, you know, like, there's not going to be a good relationship with that person if they find out about it anyways. So you might as well just be a good leader and support them going to the next step.
Yeah.
Cause Miles, I don't know anything about Miles, but correct me if I'm wrong, he didn't last long over there after that, right? Did he go somewhere else once he found out the news?
No, he played in with the Milwaukee Milkmen for like a couple more years. Then he retired. I think he's still in Milwaukee, damn, like doing like baseball like stuff, I guess, with kids. But I'm not sure. I mean, it's you got to think, like, that can't be the only instance. That it's definitely, you know, the game's not fair. That's what I'll say. The game does not give a crap about feelings. It's just about, you know, winning and, you know, whatever it is. But you know, whoever executes the game better is going to win. So, you know, whatever that way may be, like training or mentally preparing, you know, I'm trying to do both, like being a dad and trying to train at the same time. It's, you know, it's definitely a challenge, especially with my wife starting up work in next week. So like, I got to figure out how I'm going to be able to do all my stuff while helping her with cruise.
Right. Wow. When do you leave?
So we're shooting for May 15th, because I have my brother's wedding, which is in Cancun in May.
Okay.
And then I have a bachelor party I got to go to in April. My wife knows that I want to leave earlier, I think, but she understands, like, we have to establish a nanny first. We have to make sure everything's taken care of, and that's it. But I want to be here for my son. Like that's my big priority right now. I don't care if they like, we need you now. I'm like, dude, my son needs me more. Right. I don't like,
you don't want to miss these opportunities where he's so young right now.
Cause at the end of the day, you have to remember, like, this is a game. Like it's not like life or death. Like I'm not like, oh my God, if you don't come, we're going to like do something drastic. Like, no, you're not. Like I said, there's thousands of players out there looking for jobs. Like, who to say that you guys could find a new replacement for me at a drop of a hat. So like, you know, I want to play for them. I really do, but it's not up to me sometimes. I want to play for a lot of teams, but that doesn't mean they want me.
Yeah. Well, now you have all the wisdom to give your son.
Yeah.
At the very least, so that's good.
Yeah. Yep, for sure.
Well, I appreciate you having you being on our show. This was great.
Yeah, this was fun. This is our longest episode, I think, and that's just because we never wanted to stop talking. You know, of course, Andrew's, you know, equipment went out, but
honestly, this is how long at bats can take in the big leagues. Sometimes it just keeps fouling off, and it's just like, oh, we're just gonna. I mean, that's the thing. That's why I love baseball so much. There's so much to talk about. There's so many different ways that this podcast could have taken. We could have talked about, you know, more real estate in Mexico. We could have talked about Canada. We could have talked about Australia. Right. Like, you know, Italy, geez, I feel like I've been in every type of house.
I still have probably, and we won't do it today, but I probably have an hour's worth of just like topics to talk about.
Yeah.
And we could have just gone easily to. And then sometimes we like to have drinks too. Not always, but that'd be even more fun too.
Yeah. I mean,
I was wondering.
No. Like Carly's like, hey, I'm not drinking. You're not drinking. I'm like, whoa. This is a job thing kind of right now. Like, I need to do this.
There you go. There you go.
No,
I was thinking mimosas, but I didn't get any. I was thinking
mimosas,
about it.
So. Yeah. My wife loves mimosas. No, honestly, this is actually really cool. Like I love this dynamic. I like the fact that it's bringing, you know, baseball, you know, to the surface for what it really is, because, you know, a lot of people just see the glamour and like the chains and, you know, the cars and like the $1 million deal, like, you know, the Ohtani deals and stuff. Like, you know, nobody really dissects like the lower. That's why I was always like thinking, like, there's an MLB network and stuff. I was always thinking like there should be like a minor league network where like there's guys that like never really made it, or like they did make it, but they had like their cup of coffee, and then they just talk about like, who do we got in Birmingham like throwing this week? Oh, we got so and so. He's next on, like, you just like kind of giving like the inside scoop of like, you know, what minor leagues is all about. I was like thinking like, okay, well, what city are you going to go to? Oh, we're going to go to oh my God, Little Rock, Arkansas. That's where the I think that's where the Seattle Mariners AA team is. So it's like, there's like little, there's so many cities out there that have baseball teams like everywhere.
And UFC made it to where it was the Ultimate Fighting Championship because of a reality show. When you're talking about that indie ball, I mean, that just sounds like a reality show waiting to happen.
It's crazy. Like you go to like these teams and stuff, which obviously everybody's trying to market themselves, like, especially if it's a low market team, they're going to eat that crap up. They're going to be like, oh yeah, put on a GoPro, follow us around, see what it's like to be in the life of a minor leaguer. It's ridiculous. Like you're going to see how big of a difference is with the high budget teams and the low budget teams. Like the Oakland A's, like I think they've fixed it up a little bit, but when I was playing against them, oh my God, it was these guys were not being treated right at all. Like, like horrible fields, bad locker rooms. I mean, it was, you know, and that's money not ball, that's right? Not just them. Yeah. Oh yeah, Moneyball. Yeah.
They get a bigger budget now when they go to Vegas.
Seems
like they are.
I really think, I think a change of scenery would be good for them. Obviously, though,
they
like
change the name though.
The Las Vegas Gamblers.
Is that what they're going to be?
No.
Okay.
No, Las Vegas Aces. I don't know.
I said Aces.
That'd be good.
There's already a team called the Reno Aces, I think. Oh. That's a AAA team. Yeah.
Can they not do two?
I guess maybe they could. I mean, the Cardinals have like Palm Beach Cardinals.
Vegas Aces is where it's at, though. That is like the name.
Yeah.
Or Jokers.
The A's, though.
Jokers would be good. I like that.
Or Jokers, cool, yeah.
That at Full House Stadium. But yeah, it's crazy like to think that actually I think that MLB is starting to think about making more baseball teams. Like
I heard that, yeah.
Like they're like if you were to pick
MLB teams.
Yeah, MLB teams. Like, you know, I'm trying to think of another city. Like I think honestly, like all the big cities, like I think Oklahoma City should have a baseball team. That would be great. Like, you know, all the because if you look at the map, like it's like baseball, 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 and then it just nothing up in like the middle of America. There's a baseball team. So
Mexico. There's a couple like Arkansas, you know, those areas.
Yeah.
Right above
Texas. I think the sport's going to improve a little bit more though, in terms of like entertainment, I hope.
It looks like
they're going down that
path. I mean, so if they could somehow take the essence of like indie ball, like, cause it's a fun atmosphere, especially if you're playing for the right organization. Like if you guys ever, there's a documentary on the St. Paul Saints. It's this guy who is, part owner, I think owner of the White Sox, and he took over this small town market team, St. Paul, and it is blown up. They got more fans than the Minnesota Twins.
What?
Wow. Yeah. It's a fun ass experience. I always wanted to play there when I was in indie ball. Like I thought, okay, if I'm going to end my career somewhere, I want to play there. Cause it's just fun. Like it, not only on field entertainment, but like outside, like in the seats. They don't even have a press box. They just have two guys sit at a picnic table on the side, like next to the dugout. And they just be like, all right, now we got so-and-so and they just be commentating as he's like walking to the base, like, or whatever. It's like, oh, he looks like he's got three girlfriends or whatever. And I'm like, it's just like random stuff. It's so entertaining. But the Minnesota Twins bought the team. So now they're the AAA team of that, but they've kept the same stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If they can keep it like that, I think MLB, you just have to make it fun. Like, just fun. That's why I like this, I don't know if you've heard of him. I don't know. Savannah Bananas. It's like the Harlem. It's like the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball.
Is that relatively new or no?
It's been happening for like about 5 years, okay. But now it's starting to get traction because like they do so many, like guys are pitching in stilts. Like they're like hitting
It's weird.
Yeah, no, but it's fun. That's the thing. It's like,
check it out.
If you go on their Instagram, it's great. Like it's so entertaining.
They're now touring.
Yeah, I think they're touring around Arizona or something.
Yep. Yeah, they're now doing tours
at spring training facilities. That's crazy. See, like that's because honestly, that's another exposure tactic. Right. Guys can listen, I'll throw a bullpen or I'll hit some BP for you guys, and if like, hey, this guy's pretty good, we'll sign him.
Sure.
It's all about marketing.
It's all marketing. Right. I mean, that's what this is here today. Yeah. So, when you want to come back, please come back on.
Absolutely.
There's so much we could talk to you about.
Oh yeah, I'd love to come back. This is really fun.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, everyone watching, listening. Like, subscribe, and share with your friends. If you have any questions for them, please ask them. Kurt, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, man.